Welcome to the Legends of Tomorrow Flashcast, which will actually have its own legendary rotating cast among members of the Incomparable. Here with you this week is me, Lisa Schmeiser, and accompanying me are Phil Mozeliak.
Hi.
Dan Warren.
Hello.
And Jason Snell.
Legendary!
Yes, we are going to be discussing the pilot episode, or rather the first half of the two-part pilot episode. The pilot's so nice they made it twice. And I honestly had no format for this besides, does anyone else have a ton of burning questions they would like to have answered?
I'm not sure this is even technically a pilot, because it looks to me like they ordered it direct to series after they made the little demo reel, which was like that them proof standing on a rooftop having a conversation, which they then tried to put some of that back in the script for this, which I actually thought really was a mistake, because the whole first like 20 minutes of the show is getting people on that rooftop where they can recite the dialogue that we remember from that YouTube clip from the spring. And I thought that was the worst part of the episode, was that first 20 minutes where Rip Hunter is doing his best Men in Black impression and shining a light in the faces of various superheroes without getting punched.
And then you see a little bit of crossover magic with Oliver and Laurel both showing up from the Arrow to have their respective "Are you sure about this?" conversations with people who are promptly whisked away. The pilot also reminded me how very much I don't care about Hawkman.
But Among others.
The reason it felt very piloty to me was there was a big chunk of exposition at the very beginning with the first 20 minutes introduction. And then there's this big chunk of exposition at the very end where they have their kumbaya circle and talk about what does it all mean anyway. And they all state their bald motivations and then decide, well, what the heck? Why don't I just hang out and bop through time and space with this lying person and these group of people I barely know? And that also felt very piloty and, and setting you up for the rest of the series. So paradoxically, this felt a lot more like a pilot to me than an actual pilot I watched this week. So,
but this is only going on for a few like episodes, right? This isn't a quote series.
I'm not sure how many episodes this is. I thought it was 13, 9 to 13.
It's 10 to 13.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unclear whether it will come back next year and in what form. I think it depends on how well it does. I've heard rumors that if it comes back, it may be a different cast, and it may be a different, a somewhat different premise. But you know, that's all just rumors. So nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Why don't we discuss the basic premise of the series, which seems to be that this dude Rip Hunter gathers some fan favorites from different Greg Berlanti Empire shows, plus a few new characters. Plus Hawkman, yes. Oh, God. And basically, the idea is that they are to hunt down and permanently stop Vandal Savage. And Vandal Savage is an immortal who's bent on world domination and has managed to actually execute on the promise by, like, the year 2166 or what have you. We find out over the course of the series that Rip Hunter, who had lured everybody in with promises of the immortality they would surely gain through their exploits, was lying like a rug. He is, in fact, Renegade. There are a group of people who are super invested in a timeline who want to stop him from doing all of this. And the people he pulled together are actually thoroughly unremarkable. So
I actually dug that. That was my favorite part of the sort of premise, was that, you know, because we had seen that setup with that clip where he's like, "Oh, you're all legends in the future." You know, and you know, my girlfriend and I were watching this. She turned to me and goes like, "Wait a second, but like, if they're all legends, like, how did the world turn out so badly?" You know, like all this stuff, and sort of like, or very early on, sort of poking a hole in that. And I like that they undercut that. Yeah, she is a smart lady. I like that they undercut the premise of that, because it is, you know, it makes it much more interesting in that sense. I like that he's gone rogue. I like that they're all basically not unimportant necessarily, but, you know, considered to be kind of second rung heroes, as it were. So it gives them something to strive for. Yeah. And she also turned to me at some point and goes, "This is exactly Doctor Who. He stole the time machine and ran off."
Yeah, it is the producers of The Flash and Arrow are Doctor Who fans. We know it. And they went so far as to cast a Doctor Who actor as Rip Hunter. And yes, the premise is a rogue time person steals a time machine and runs off. That is, it's hilarious. Except
I'm
in this
okay
case,
with that.
It's spaceship.
Great. And I like Arthur Darvill.
See, I don't watch Doctor Who, so
Well, the references were there. They were present. There will probably be more, but it's an interesting mashup because it's, you know, there's superheroes on board of this time machine. I don't really, I mean, the Time Masters, I thought it was my moment where I knew exactly where it was going, Dan, was when he basically petitions the Time Masters to make this change in the timeline, and we cut to
and they say no, and smash cut.
Basically smash cut to, you know, it's what you expected, so let's go. And I'm like, yeah, well, it is what you expected. They said no, and now you're going to go anyway. And this is the story. And it's very clear that this is what his story is going to be. But I like Arthur Darvill. He has the first 20 minutes of this I thought was a complete disaster because it's just so much exposition. There's so much dialogue that I get what they're trying to do. I'd almost rather have been dropped in something where it's almost like suffice it to say.
I'd like it if they all woke up on the ship and you found out that way, where they're all like, how did we get here, as opposed to them voluntarily signing on.
And
like,
let it kind of unravel. His story can kind of unravel and his lies become known. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, because there's so much mechanics of these characters getting around that I think is not interesting. And it doesn't help, really, because the premise is ludicrous. And this is one of those, it's just a show, you should really just relax kind of moments. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, why even bother trying to build this scaffolding on this thing that's totally, you know, doesn't merit the scaffolding because it's ridiculous. Just get to get to the bar fight in the 70s with Captain and Tennille playing in the background.
Because that was pretty awesome. That was like the highlight. So I had a couple minor quibbles with the whole Time Lords thing, which is, why are they always British? Like, just once, I would like one of these grand high councils and these elevated chambers where instead of all of them speaking in lofty British accents, like they all have serious New York accents going
that's
on.
That's easy.
Or they all have Vandal like deep Savage. Alabamian drawls. No, y'all aren't taking that. or just some
Texas Time Rangers? Is that what you're looking for?
Hmm. I'm looking for anything other than British people tell you no.
Well, it is, to be fair, it is set in London, but granted, that does not undo your point.
Well, like, the Blitz is set in London, but in theory, they're talking about a whole timeline that affects everything, so...
I think it's because it's a Doctor Who homage is the reason.
Yeah, I'm just very tired of British accent being shorthand for alien high council.
Well, like, it's also, I think, you know, when you're making shows for, you know, an American audience, you're like, how do we lend these people credence and yet make them sound, you know, like us? Oh, we'll just make them British. Just give them British accents. It'll be fine.
No, I'm telling you, you gotta go with like a deep South drawl one of these days, or a New York accent, or even like a Massachusetts accent. I would love it if it was a Massachusetts accent, actually.
This is a wicked bad idea, Rip.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't have the time machine.
It's a baby whale. You know that guy. Get him in there. So there was that. And the second one, and this is the series of... There were parts of the pilot I really liked and enjoyed, and the part of the pilot where I was like, oh, come on, is when you find out that the professor who like gives them all the exposition on how Vandal Savage is tied to the Hawk people and immortality and reincarnation, blah blah blah, and also, you were my parents a couple iterations ago, and Kendra, who is still adjusting to the fact that she's tied to the cement jawed guy through cycles of immortality, is all, oh, my baby, and treats it like that for the rest of the episode. And I was like, wait, what? How did you bond so quickly? Like, you can't remember your past lives, which has been a big thing. It's the stakes felt forced and false to me.
A mother's bond transcends any resurrections. Yes.
Resurrections, logic, plausibility. It felt forced. It felt like they were trying to up the stakes, and it also felt like it was supposed to be a little lesson in, this is what happens when you muck with the timeline. It mucks back with you. I enjoyed a lot more what they're doing with White Canary. I thought that her arc was probably the best on the show, and I hear someone disagreeing with me, so I want to hear why.
Well, I think the reason I think this has one fatal flaw, is that Who's the star of this? Who's got the charisma of this crew?
Honestly, I think Captain Cold, but that's my bias is well established.
Really, the only one that has any kind of standout power is probably Dominic Purcell.
Mm. I also can see that point. She's right.
He's kind of the Jane of this crew.
Is that a Doctor Who reference?
No,
Firefly. It's from Firefly.
Okay, again, another show I actually didn't watch much. Ah. I skimmed it like on Hulu and was like, eh, whatever. So
I have to go now, Lisa. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Well,
I think one of the problems here is that, you know, there is no, this is a show with nine characters. Who's the lead? And the answer is there is none. Is it Arthur Darvill? I mean, he gets the plot going, but he's just this guy in a trench coat they're surrounded by superheroes. Is it Heatwave and Captain Cold? Because they're certainly very kind of outsized. I always think that the Firestorm dynamic is interesting because I think Firestorm is a cool character, and then the two people who compose Firestorm are interesting on their own. Although Victor Garber's character is basically kind of awful.
Professor Exposition.
Well, no, and he's awful. L-A-N. He drugs his buddy.
That's a weird choice that actually makes no sense whatsoever based on his character from what we've seen in The Flash.
Yeah.
That doesn't track at all.
Yeah,
I liked much more the dynamic between him and Ray Palmer, where he's kind of dismissive of what Ray has accomplished.
Yeah.
He keeps calling him Mr. Palmer. And Ray's like, really?
And Ray's actually
Dr.
interesting.
Palmer. Yeah, I like Ray. And Ray is one of my favorite characters from Arrow. So, and Brandon Routh is very charming. They just don't give him a lot to do in this episode. And you're right. The problem is, like, you can do a successful ensemble show. You look at something like, you know, The West Wing or something like that. It's like, all right, you can have a show with a ton of characters that's done well. But the problem is that all these people are, to a certain extent, you know, they're not all main characters, but they feel like they're all sort of competing for the screen time instead of sharing it. And I think, I mean, that takes some time, and meshing an ensemble certainly takes some time. So, you know, I'm prepared to give it an episode or two to see if they can find a better rhythm for it and develop smarter subplots and interpersonal relationships. Firefly had nine characters and, you know, eight or nine characters, and they did a good job of balancing it there. Granted, it was obvious that Nathan Fillion was the star of that show, but they did a good job balancing, like, having all the other characters.
I
like
the Zoe and Wash characters whenever they pull in their relationship. That was great on Firefly.
I'd almost think, and we'll see as this show goes, but I almost think this show would work better if they were in, like, Time HQ, and then various characters got sent out on various missions, because eight is a lot, right? And maybe that's
eight
where they're
enough.
Going. Although I keep looking at the size of this cast and thinking, well, we're going to lose some of these characters.
We're going to lose Hawkeye.
It seems like, I mean, hey, he's going to reincarnate. It'll be okay.
I think what's going to happen with him, and this is my prediction up front, is that he's going to sacrifice himself out of love for Kendra, and in a desperate effort to stop the whole Vandal Savage thing from going on.
Well, and the Vandal Savage,
she'll feel all guilty.
One of them has to kill him for him to stay dead. And so,
yeah.
You can sort of see that maybe what's going to happen, and again, we don't know, this isn't a spoiler, it's pure speculation, but I agree with you, Lisa, he seems expendable, and then she has, and they put a little more effort into her character, she has a story arc where she has to be the one to kill Vandal Savage, she feels like she's not really prepared to be a superhero yet. I know Hawkman has like an important place in DC Comics lore and all of that, but the character seems really boring, and I just feel like they got to lose some characters as they go, because this is too many actors.
The one problem with killing him off, then, is that character has... I feel like you lack some emotional weight in killing off somebody that nobody likes. Because, he's gone.
Well, I think what you do is you focus on Kendra's anger and guilt, because she'll feel guilty that he'll sacrifice himself for her with... Like, there's that... The intro sequence was he's calling her my love, and she's clearly not comfortable with it, and he's presuming a whole lot of emotional resonance that she doesn't feel. And I like that because it was actually a really nice add-on from the whole Flash thing where Cisco's like, you really don't seem to like this guy that much. And she's like, yeah, I don't. But, you know, plot. And I think what's going to happen is he'll be like, Kendra, my love, I'll do it for you. And he dies in some heroic and fantastically stupid way. And then she'll feel guilty and about that. And she'll feel angry and panicky and scared about having to take on Savage herself. But through the power of time travel and friendship, it will all work out. I think that basically he'll die so that Kendra's character can continue to become more well-developed.
My
guess.
We'll see. But it's just there's a lot of clutter here, and whether they kill people off or whether they end up in a scenario where only some of them, where they split up the team or something like that, it's just I don't see how you can have a show with this many characters in it who are all active characters like this. So in 13 episodes or whatever. So it's an interesting point. I mean, what they end up doing is they do split the they split the team in two, and you've got the team that's going to visit the guy with the bow tie who we saw in that in the crossover episodes of the show when we first met of Flash and Arrow when we met Vandal Savage.
He's on the infamous Betamax tape.
Yeah, exactly right. The Betamax tape that Felicity can play with a keyboard, and and so they go to see him, and it turns out that he's the son of the Hawks, and that's kind of an interesting thing. And then meanwhile, everybody else is back at the ship getting into trouble, and so that did kind of work as your A and B plot that kind of come together in the end. I that was when the show got fun, was that last when Captain Cold and Heatwave are messing things up.
Oh my gosh. And it's obvious, and their redemption arc is going to be like Captain Cold is going to become a reluctant hero of some sort, and then the question is just whether he was along for the ride or continues to be a baddie until the end.
Right.
But they were so funny. And the bar scene when Sarah looks over and she's like, a little help, and Captain Cold like just smashes both beers and he's like, yeah, let's do this. I was like, oh, this is great. Oh my gosh.
See, but wait a minute. When have we ever seen Wentworth actually punch somebody in the face? Give
He's
me
always
that
at first.
Yeah. I'm not jealous of him. I'm talking about character only. Dominic Purcell, Heatwave, sure. I can see him smashing people up. But like that made zippo sense to me. Like, oh yeah, Captain Cold's going to just get into the brawl.
Well, he's a criminal. I think maybe he's learned a couple things here and there.
He's a planner, not a fighter.
He's a lover.
I thought that was so much fun. I thought that was a great deal of fun to see that bar fight. And we see Sarah. She's, you know, because she's got the bloodlust, right? She's got the reincarnation bloodlust, and she's fighting it. I wanted to mention about Sarah. It's really nice that I guess in his spare time, Cisco now is just designing superhero outfits for.
I enjoy that about him.
I wait for the superhero red carpet. Who are you wearing, Cisco?
It's all Cisco, yeah.
It's all Cisco
because he's got the white outfit there, just ready for Sarah. And you know, on one level, it's ridiculous. On another level, you know, that sounds like Cisco to me. Cisco is the aware character who thinks everybody should have a uniform and everybody should have a name. He probably said to Laurel, White Canary, that's the concept here, is she's going to come back into the light. And Laura's like, yeah, I can use that when I talk to her about this. That's good, Cisco. He's got the plan. He's the editor-in-chief of the Arrowverse.
Like, I hope. Yeah. He really is. You're right. He's the editor. That's a great way of putting it, is he's basically like, all right, this is the product line.
Yeah. You guys got to stay on brand here, people.
Yeah. Come on.
Did anybody have any problem with the kind of... I really had a hard time with the kid getting shot in the face, or, well, I assume that it was cut away, but
yeah.
When
oh,
kids
he was
get
killed,
killed
but yeah.
That's a little, I can see where the arc went, that it was Rip's son.
Right.
Okay. I got that, and but I was like, that really is, you're really pushing it right out of the box pretty hard with something like that. But I accepted that kind of little bit of a curve. But like, even when the Time Bounty Hunter comes in, quote unquote, Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And then he just eliminates two people from existence ever. Like, that was like, to me, that was the darkest moment of the series. Like, shooting children in the face is terrible and awful. And like, you know, I had that cringe. I'm like, ooh, but like, when Kronos comes and he's like, you're not relevant to the timeline, and completely erases them from existence. Like, they've never existed. Boom. No one will ever have any recollection of them. He's utterly annihilated them. They have ceased
Doesn't
to be.
Doesn't that impose something on the future? Like, I would think the Time Masters, like, eventually a couple of them disappear. Like,
it's the idea. It's the idea that you can be erased from existence and no one will have any recollection of you ever existing. Like, to me, that is horribly dark and nihilistic and awful.
Is that stated,
and I was like, oh, that's terrible.
I thought he just disintegrated them.
Yeah, and says nobody will miss you.
Yeah, but if he says nobody will miss you, then that implies that they literally left no effect on...
No, it just means they don't have any family or anything.
Or that it was well, easy
says,
enough
are
to
you,
lift them, or that's easy enough
timeline.
To lift them out of the, or that's easy enough to lift them out of the timeline where it's like they never existed.
Yeah, well, I think
that was the interpretation I took from
it. I don't take that. I think they live to that point and then they die, like the professor. And so they're not lifted. But if you're from the perspective of the future, then suddenly they die in 1975 instead of living on to 1990 or you know, whenever. Kronos, by the way, the laziest name for a time bounty hunter ever.
That really is, yeah.
He looks cool, though. I like the character design.
Sure.
I wonder if it's
I think the effects in general, the ship looks great.
Yeah.
I think that the...
I still don't know why they have a spaceship if they don't go to space, but okay.
It's a time ship.
No, do they go like on the time slipstream?
Fly through time? They do. Yeah. I did like when he goes to the...
A temporal
they don't,
limbo.
Don't call it the vortex. That's Doctor Who. It's limbo. Sure. Okay, whatever.
But I was going to say, I thought that the most of the stunts, the fight choreography, the production values, I thought were very good. I was, you know, I was pretty pleased with that for the most part, especially because I think this requires probably even more, you know, expenditure in FX than either Flash or Arrow, honestly. And it, I think they did a pretty good job with it. 1975 seems like a pretty easy time to like work into because it's like, oh yeah, we can mock up a 1970 set pretty easily. It'll be a little more interesting to see how they do when they go, you know, to other times.
To the Old West to visit Jonah Hex.
Yeah, yeah. But I did like that. I like the fight scene in the back half where they're running for the ship. Like I thought that was good. I enjoyed it. I agree with Jason. The second half of this episode is much stronger than the first half of the episode after they get all the table setting out of the way. And it does seem to like, you know, set the stakes a little better. So, and I'm interested to see the next episode, how they will, if they will capitalize on that and be able to push it a little bit further.
Yeah, Lisa, I keep thinking, was it the Authority? What's the show where they're in the sort of like in the middle of the multiverse and they can make doors and step
that's
out?
That's the Authority.
That's the Authority.
They tack the ship into what's called the Bleed, which which is like the sort of like a crossroads between different multiverses, and they can just kind of open doors and pop into any universe they want.
So I was thinking of that with this time ship, the Limbo thing, that it's sort of like a time version of that, where there's like they kind of go into the middle and then they kind of pop out somewhere else and all of that. And I'm not sure you really need a cool spaceship here, but it does, you know, it is cool. It is very cool, and I like that they've got that set. I think he obviously takes eight people because he's got eight chairs, by the way. Yeah. So, you know,
I can't take more. I roll my eyes hard at that.
It's
got to
be balanced. You got to have balance inside the ship.
You need a seatbelt.
That's nine people total, and then you have like a Brady. They should just change the credits to Brady Bunch style grid where they're all looking up and around at each other. Rip Hunter's in the amazing center in the Alice Square, obviously.
And wait a minute. Now, hold on, because we talk about the ship now.
I feel like Hawkman is the Jan.
Well, what about Gideon? Like, now there's a British version of Gideon?
I know, because one of my big bugbears on Flash this season has been they had Gideon last season, and she was tied to Yobard Thawne. And that now there's a Gideon on this ship. And my question is Gideon basically a brand name for different AIs? Like, you have a Gideon that comes off the line? Or is it one AI that is intricately tied to the Bleed or the Void or whatever?
She's tied to, isn't she created by Barry?
Created by, like, Barry Allen, yeah.
Yeah, like we know that from the first season anyway. So either, I assumed it was a subsequent version way down the line from 2166.
Yeah,
but it is interesting that they decided to. I mean, they could have just made it something else entirely, right? So I wonder if there is a reason that they decided to use that concept.
And it's not the same Gideon because this one has a British accent.
Well, then so does Siri. Think about that.
Yeah, maybe they just changed the voice. That's fine.
Yeah, it's more comfortable.
I'm telling you, again, we've got to get back to making our omniscient things, like get rid of the British accent and go with something else. Maybe even a Newfoundland accent. I would go for that.
no one would understand them.
Yeah, just thick Scottish accent. Although, you know,
oh my God, that'd be the greatest AI ever, because the potential for miscommunication. I'm sorry, I'm just imagining AIs with all of these different accents, or like a Hawaiian AI that just speaks in pidgin. I would totally love to see that happen.
What else do we have here that is not AI related? Because it's just a setting. I don't know. I tried to not think too hard about the time travel thing in general, because like with the Flash, I feel like I'm not sure I understand the rules of the time travel in this universe, and, you know.
Yeah, I kind of like when they don't make the rules very specific, because the minute you start making something specific, people can figure out the yes, but.
Right.
And then that ruins the whole thing. So if you're like, oh, just go with it, we time travel. I have a lot of questions about how Vandal Savage manages to dominate the 21st century when we have seen hints in the shows that led to this show, talking about how Barry is going to basically found the Justice League. There are allusions to the other founding members of the Justice League, so on and so forth. And my question is, well, what happens to them? But again, kind of go for it. And the other thing that wasn't bugging me per se, but has me intrigued is where they're going to take the Atom, because the whole arc in the first episode was him being like, look, I died, and basically nobody noticed, you know, like my company went on without me, my money just sat there and continue to collect interest.
Rename the whole city after him. What more does he want?
But he's like, I want to change the world. I want to make it a better place. And it's pretty, and Rip managed to play on that with, you'll become a legend. And it's pretty obvious the reason the Adam's in for this is because he desperately wants to become one of those world changer, world beater, change the world type of guys. So is his hubris going to do him in, or is this going to be one of these arcs where, yes, Ray Palmer finally does manage to get the recognition and plaudits that he so desperately craves? Like, this guy that was the Baxter through all of Arrow, and his intellectual mentor is like, I don't remember you at all in this episode. So it seems like they're setting something up. I don't know how complicated they're going to get, and I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I do like his arc there. I like his back and forth with Professor Stein, because mm-hmm. it is tricky. Like, how do you deal with having these two characters who have very similar backgrounds and making them? It's interesting that they make him put him in a conflict with Stein, whereas, you know, Jefferson Jackson, who is very much, you know, sort of orthogonally opposed to Professor Stein in terms of like their backgrounds and upbringings and all that and personalities, right? They make them a tightly bonded unit, even though, let's set aside the whole drugging him thing, mm-hmm. because, boy, spectacularly bad choice from the writers on that one. Yep. There were any number of other ways to do that, and it's just, they felt like, we need the one reluctant person who doesn't want to do it. How are we going to convince them to get on board?
And a young black man with not a whole lot of societal agency is drugged and hijacked for a mission he didn't want in the first place.
Well, and
there's
the thing
no slavery
is,
parallel there at all. No, I mean, none.
There's, the thing is, like, you could have played that card with any of the other characters, and there was no reason to do it for him, because it, among other things, like, based on what we hear about him, you know, in the end, in which he comes around eventually, like, seems like he would have probably been okay with going, you know, with going in the first place. I feel like perhaps one of the other characters might have been a better fit for that particular role. It's not terribly important that it is him mm-hmm. who is objecting to this. So that was a bad choice. You make bad choices sometimes. I don't think it... as long as it doesn't become a theme, I think we're okay. This is more of just a... That was a misstep. Try not to screw up again, guys.
Yeah.
Knockout Heat Wave, like B.A. Baracus style, rather than...
exactly. That would have been way better.
I would have loved that. Oh,
I ain't getting
God.
On no time ship.
No, God, I love the idea of making B.A. Baracus.
Right, but again, it's, you know, they just didn't think it through. You know, Dan, it is a known fact that you know, university professors have easy access to RU-248.
Yeah,
I'm just leaving that there, Mose.
I'm just telling you that's the facts. That's the
I
facts.
I thought that was one of the
presented.
Perks of tenure.
Oh, Victor Garber, say it ain't so. I that was a mistake. I think it hurts his character. It doesn't really make any sense. It's too bad. One of the funny things I feel about these characters is I can't decide who I would jettison, right? I feel like there's so many characters, but they're all very interesting supporting characters, so having them all kind of roll together is fun. The biggest decision that they made is having Captain Cold and Heat Wave involved in this, because that's where I get to the, do I really buy this? And I guess I thought it was okay, that scene where they're together and he basically says, look, you know, this is an opportunity for us. Let's just kind of hang around for now. Like, it's not like they turned good or something. They're still very skeptical about it. Although what I like about Captain Cold more than Heatwave, but Captain Cold has always been not quite your usual villain on The Flash. He's, you know, he's smart. And he's got some honor, but yet he just really loves crime, I guess. So he can't help himself. But you know, what does everybody think of the how those guys fit in? Because that's the really weird decision about this show, is to have bad guys on their team.
My sense is that you needed some comedic. Is that when they were brainstorming the show, they're like, all right, we clearly need a comedy element here, and. Those two can reliably deliver. And I was actually very surprised by how funny Dominic Purcell was through this entire episode. Like, just the way he tosses off lines and keeps going, you know, like with the roofies. Oh, I'm not judging.
Yeah.
So my sense is part of it is comedy, and part of it is it lends it some plot complexity, because they are pretty clear that the reason they're on this thing is because they're going to steal things from every time period, since there's no repercussions for them. And it's part of it is the thrill of the heist. And you now have this looming plot question, which is, can they stop being selfish and or criminals long enough to save the universe? Or will they revert to like, I guess, revert to type? So you have like comedic stakes, you have quasi-dramatic stakes. And like I said, I'm curious to see if the two of them always remain a unit, or if like one of them is like, oh, we can be heroes just for a day, and the other one is all, no, no, we can't. Mm-mm, not doing it.
See, I would say that they're going to have a sacrifice moment where, you know, they're going to have stolen something that, oh, if only we can get to 2016 with this, boom. And then they're going to have to actually use that, whatever it might be, and defeat Vandal Savage. And that would be okay. I mean, it's kind of like Ant-Man. You know, you're pulling a thief in to do something good, even though Ant-Man is, you know, fairly good, but you're pulling these guys in to kind of twist the perspective on that character. I kind of hate Vandal Savage. I think the guy's like kind of, he's just dopey. And he speaks in these big, you know, kind of soliloquies, and it's just like, dude, you're a monologue machine.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea. It depends on how they execute him, because I like the idea of not getting a lot of Vandal Savage and him not really being the villain. I found like he wasn't that interesting when he was fighting everybody in Flash and Arrow, because he's this immortal, unbeatable guy. I like it if it's more of a Where's Waldo kind of thing, where they're hopping from place to place trying to find him in his own personal timeline, because he's immortal. They keep trying to find angles of like, when was he most vulnerable? Can we get him here? Can we get him here? And I think that's funny, because from Vandal Savage's perspective, throughout his life, these stupid time travelers keep trying to kill him. I think that's
actually very cool. That's a cool idea, because right? He's going to get wise to it.
Yeah,
it's yeah, like and maybe wise to it way. Before they are, right?
Because they're out of order, right? So mm-hmm. they might show up in like, you know, mid in the 80s or something, and he's like, I already fought you guys back in the Old West, don't you remember that? And they're like,
or he's like, I know
guess
how
we have
ends.
To go to the Old West next.
Yeah, exactly. So that yeah. if they go down that path, and it's not so much that Vandal Savage is, I mean, he thwarts them at every turn perhaps, but it's not about his grand schemes, his evil schemes. His schemes are in the future, but it's more just like, where is he? Can we figure out where he is, you know, again, this week, and take a shot at him? And although I don't know how long that you can do that before everybody's like fatalistic about it, and like, well, we can't this isn't working, guys, he's still there. I don't know, but you know, but that might be interesting, Mo's, but I'm agreeing with you that he as a character, he's kind of a snooze. He's just a really big bad guy who's bad and immortal and rules the world. And yeah,
I have to lay some fault of that. I think the actor who I didn't love in the crossover, he was all right, but here being asked to hold so much more menace, he just does not do. He and Hawkman also both have the problem where it's like, you know, clearly I'm guessing English may not be your first language in either of your cases.
Yeah. Casper Crump is Danish, so it
and
is
I
not his first language.
Falk, what's his name, is German, actually, the Hawkeye portrayal. He does the like, I'm kind of going to do a New York accent, but it's not quite right.
Oh, yeah, he's German.
Yeah, yes. And so neither of them quite pull it off, which is a little distracting at times. And in Vandal Savage's case, it especially makes no sense, because he's supposed to be Egyptian. And that's bizarre.
Skyrox. It's all because of the Skyrox.
It's all because of the Skyrox. Please don't make me think about the Skyrox again. So I think you can have a great megalomaniac supervillain, CF Damian Dark, but you know, this guy is not quite carrying the gravitas and he's not as threatening as I would like to see.
I don't feel like he's got the requisite energy.
Who's the Russian guy?
The Russian guy in actual history that like they tried to kill
Rasputin.
Ivan the Terrible.
Rasputin. Isn't that who he's really supposed to be?
Is like a Rasputin analog, where he's the puppet master behind the scenes.
I think in fact, I think they said that he is also actually was Rasputin. I think that's one of the implications, is that he's been throughout history. He works behind the scenes.
He's
to
like
do
Randall
these
Flagg, except not done by Stephen King.
All but in this case, it's also, he's all leading for his grand plan. He can take his time. He's patient. His grand plan, where he executes, obviously, in sometime 150 years from now.
And he's got time.
And then boom, now he's taken over the world. I
totally okay.
We'll we'll see. What if, you know, once he takes over the world, what if he has his own time travel capability and it becomes this sort of game of good and bad time travelers or something? I mean, there are places they could go with this. But yeah, right now, he's just not particularly charismatic or interesting. He's just this, I mean, because he has no weaknesses, right? I mean, he's just kind of, he rules the world and he's immortal and he's impervious, basically.
Yeah, his only weakness is tied to the Hawk people. And
who are not that interesting, right?
No. It's and honestly, if they can just peg that down, then the question becomes, how do you get Vandal Savage in a room where you can just pin him down and have somebody kill him? Boom, end of story.
Yeah.
Like, unless either Carter or Kendra is like, oh, I have a moral objection to killing, and then that turns into a thing. Like, it's just not going to be a starter, as it were.
I don't think anyone's going to... I think that's part of the reason they killed the son in the first episode, is to make sure that they're both like, yeah, we're going to kill this guy, right? Like, there is no objection for us.
Oh, he's dead now. Yeah, one of those things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he is sort of a vague... I mean, I guess, you know, they've fought him before. Most of the other of the team has no knowledge of him whatsoever. And so they actually have an idea. And really, you know, Hawkman better than Hawk Girl has an idea of like what he's actually capable of, because he remembers, you know, all their past murders. But for the rest of them, he's kind of a vague threat right now, right? Like, he's not really, you know, this person from the future has told us there is a guy who's going to conquer the world. But meh, like... we haven't seen him do anything.
Yeah, he's not laying groundwork.
Even in this first episode, right? Like, what he does is restricted to the backstory for Rip at the beginning. And no, we don't see him otherwise. All the other damage is done by Kronos, who is sent by the Time Masters, the ostensible good guys. So there's not a lot of stakes for the rest of the team yet.
You have a good point about that. Yeah. A lot of conflicting loyalties, I feel.
Yeah. Well, that could be good. That could be good. I mean, that's...
You have to have some on a show this big, right?
We're one hour into, you know, whatever, 15, 16-episode season. So there's a lot. I mean, when you think about it, it's a mid-season. We keep thinking of it as the short thing. It's going to be longer than Daredevil, right?
That's crazy. When you said that, I was just like, wow. So I kind of feel slightly better about what I'm seeing. Like, I can take this episode and go ahead and put it in the garbage can like it's going to be put. But
off the last
that,
half first.
Harsh.
Yeah. Right. But it is harsh. But, you know, but like...
Love will keep us together. Don't worry. Mm-hmm.
That's
I love knowing that Heatwave's mom played that. Like, it just makes me wonder what kind of upbringing he had.
Mm. Not just a little, a lot.
Yeah, like a lot. That he mentions that and he's like haunted. All of my mom played that a lot. Like, really?
But I think it's got mm-hmm. legs to go if, you know, we're putting a lot of trust in... You know, two shows that we really like a lot, and I just hope that they haven't stretched themselves too thin.
Yeah. Well, looking at this week's Arrow episode, I feel worried that they have, because I thought it was terrible. But the Flash was okay. I thought the Arrow episode was terrible, and then the first half of this, I thought, oh geez. But then the second half, I'm a little concerned that they've all extended themselves. You throw Supergirl in the mix too, and that there's it's tough. But you know, it's hard to get started with a show, and you know, the Flash came open like first episode, but it took Arrow a while, and this is a tough trick, right? I mean, and moving all these supporting characters in and giving them complicated premise, I'm gonna keep watching, because I think that this could go really interesting places. But I agree with Moe's, like, if I don't throw the whole episode in the garbage, I feel like I gotta throw the first half at least in the garbage, because it's just like, you know, you gotta bank on the potential here, I think, more than the actual episode.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I guess I'm less negative than you guys, but I'm also...
Well,
I have a high tolerance for garbage. Liked, the stuff that I really liked, like, I like the fact that Sarah has kind of automatically gravitated to the ostensible quote-unquote baddies in the group, and that they already seem to have a good working relationship. So I like that my favorite characters are already doing interesting things together. I like where they're going with the Atom, or where I think they're going to go with the Atom. Like I said, the stuff I was the most uncomfortable with is, let us forcibly Shanghai this young black man who has no say in what we want him to do, because there's just a lot of layers of baggage I don't think any of the writers bothered to think about. And I don't buy Rip Hunter yet, other than I lied to you and brought you all together, but I don't care about you. I don't care. I don't care about you at all. Yeah. So
he's actually would be on my list of people who could get killed too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And although we know from Doctor Who, sorry, Lisa, that he'll just come back. But but you could kill. I mean, that would be one way the show could go. Is that what if they lose Rip Hunter and they're like,
they're
well,
stranded.
Now what do we do? Do you, anybody
like,
know how to fly this thing? And they go from
that
there.
Be,
that could be too. I don't know.
That would
well,
be
it's
so
got autopilot.
Great.
We know that
Gideon, right?
But they don't know how to use much of that stuff. It would be so great if they had to like figure it out under the worst possible circumstances. I would watch the heck out of that. That would be the
That sounds like Stargate.
Yeah, well, sorry, Arthur Darvill, but I do like him, and I think we might learn more about him, and that might be interesting. We've got his premise of his wife and child were killed, and now he's gone rogue in order to do this. I assume we're going to get a lot of shenanigans with the Time Lords. I mean, the Time Masters, because they're unhappy with him, and you know, that might be fun too. There's a lot here. It's just how they put it all together, and if it makes sense.
And the other question I have is, his wife and child are dead in 21 whatever, but what would stop him from like an earlier intervention or spying on them in some other capacity?
Well, like, that's kind of what he's doing, right? Like the point is to go back and stop Vandal Savage so that they'll never die.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's,
I think that's his ultimate
end.
That's
how end it goal. Ends. That's how it ends right there, Dan.
Maybe he discovers it's not that easy. But again, I think we're thinking about time travel now, which
we're
is a danger.
And we may be thinking about it more than the people writing the show are.
It could be. I did. This is the show that more than any other show I've watched lately, I've had that Mystery Science Theater reaction of, it's just a show. You should really just relax. Go with it. Yeah. It's fun. Once they start fighting in the bar in the 70s, at least, it's fun.
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that.
Are we expecting any crossover action from Arrow and Flash or anybody else going down the line?
I believe both Stephen Amell and Grant Gustin will appear, as well as, I think they've said, Neil McDonough and Matt Mabel, who played Ra's al Ghul, are all
scheduled
to appear.
I think Cisco's going to be in it, too.
Well,
I think they're going to roll people through.
Be part of it, since he can vibe through different space-time continuums and all that.
It's basically crossover show anyway.
They've got a rich cast to draw from on both of those shows, so I think they're going to try to use that as much as possible.
Yeah.
Synergy.
Yeah.
I would love if they could bring in one or more or multiple versions of Harrison Wells. Oh my gosh, that would just make it.
Only Harry.
Harry. Like, the idea is you get Harrison Wells before he's like brain sucked by Yobard Thawne.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wouldn't that be something where, you know, all of a sudden there's the temptation to completely avert that disaster?
Drop into season one of Arrow. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I would. Yeah,
or
exactly.
On the island. Oh, they time travel to the island.
Yeah, everything happens
here.
On that stupid prison
that
island.
Would make that flashback last week make sense.
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
That flashback last week was ridiculous.
And then for the next like 5 weeks, everybody would say, I was on an island for a few days.
And they're like,
that's
why
I'm cranky.
Real jerk.
Anything more? I feel like we've beaten this
I feel
pilot
like we've
part
been, yeah,
one
you
to
know
death.
What, like, this is the thing, is we've got four people talking about a 45-minute show. I feel like we've bottomed this out. What I'm going to suggest for future Flashcasts is, maybe since next week is supposed to be part two, maybe we do a follow-up and then just go to like an every few weeks kind of schedule and let the plot lines play out a little more organically. How does that sound?
That sounds reasonable to me.
Whatever you want to do. You are our time master, Lisa.
Oh, that's very sweet.
We are just the three people you have drugged and dragged onto this podcast.
No, right.
We didn't even want to be here.
Master, not the Victor Garber character. I'm the, I'm like, again, the more I think about that, the more uncomfortable it gets. Yeah.
Indeed.
Oh, so gross.
I'm just going to imagine that it was Heatwave saying, I ain't getting on this time ship.
Oh, God, that
exactly.
would be so great.
In like a straight jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I'm on board.
I like the idea that Captain Cold is the one that like administers the sedative every time in some new and sneaky way.
And Rip Hunter says, I love it when a plan comes together.
And Captain Cold twirls his mustache that he doesn't have.
Does this podcast have a name yet? We should come up with a clever name for it.
We should, or we can take suggestions on Twitter.
Sure. From the Flash cast nation, or whatever you call them.
Legends of Right Now. Legends of Right Now discuss Legends of Tomorrow.
Sure.
In any event, let's wrap this sucker up.
Okay.
And again, I want to thank everybody for participating, and I hope that you, the listeners, can look forward to a rotating cast of characters as we head through the season. We are not ever going to try to do 9 people at once.
That would be crazy.
Yes, that would be an ill-conceived idea. Okay, with you this week, I was Lisa Schmeiser.
I was Jason Snell and hope to continue being him until the timeline is rewritten.
That's Dan Morin.
And that's Philip Mozeliak.
All right.
There we go.
Thank you all so much for listening.